State lawmakers in Tennessee and North Dakota have recently been setting examples for several other Republican-led legislatures introducing bills that seek to limit drag performances. In some cases, bills would criminalize performing in drag on public property, in public spaces, or in any location where they could be seen by a minor. In other cases, clubs and performance venues that host drag performances could be regulated like strip clubs. Well, no, Wisconsin lawmakers have come forward with similar bills. Madison East High School's Gender and Sexuality Alliance Group had planned to hold its first drag show in January, billing it as family-friendly. School officials postponed that event due to safety concerns after hostile posts online. Former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker tweeted in response to the event's announcement, quote, "Let's be clear, drag shows are strip shows. They are wrong. They're particularly wrong at school. They are definitely not family-friendly," end quote. PolitiFact rated that statement as false. We're going to talk about some of the long history of drag performances and the backlash against them, past and present. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the history of drag performances? Have you attended or participated in events like these? Did you see ones that were family-friendly, others that were less so? Do you want to see regulations different than they are now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Finn Enke is professor of history and gender and women's studies at UW-Madison and director of the undergraduate LGBTQ plus studies certificate program at UW-Madison. Finn, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Can you start off with a basic working definition of what we mean when we say drag?
Sure. Drag, it's actually a term that's derived from ancient Greek theater, so it goes back a very long way. The Greek word means masquerade, and the roots of drag have really remained in theatrical performances, generally involving cross-dressing, which itself is an ancient theater practice, and not only in Western culture, but actually most of the world. We see it in many Asian cultural context as well. And to a large extent, theater itself is really unimaginable without the history of actors playing a variety of gender roles. And that's what was typically associated with that term drag. There have always been many different kinds of drags and many different contexts for drag performances, including drag balls that are community performance events, theater and so forth. And some of it really is probably as old as human history.
One more historical stop. If I know my history correctly here, in Shakespeare's day, women weren't allowed in most cases to be actors. And there are a lot of women's roles in Shakespeare. So theoretically, there were a lot of, I guess, drag performances on the stage then.
Yes, absolutely. It's integral to Shakespearean theater. We can't imagine Shakespearean theater without it. But in fact, it goes back farther than that. And any theater context that begins with the premise of gender of actors in a specific gender generally involve that. So Japanese theater traditions are very strongly associated also with all female theaters and all male theaters that involve a great deal of cross-dressing and cross-gender performance.
Now, you mentioned drag balls. What other kinds of performances are really, I guess, drag-centric as opposed to, you know, a theatrical performance that might feature people performing different gender roles? If that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a great question. The drag balls I was referring to specifically in North America, queer drag shows, and they even were called drag balls, have existed at least since the 19th century. And they are generally community events. They involve performative dancing. They involve, of course, cross-dressing. And the emphasis primarily has been on community building and creating a space for community performance, for creative expression, and for really just highlighting the creative brilliance of queer culture, and, you know, most importantly, I think providing a space for that to grow and flourish.
Talking to Finn Enke, professor of history, gender, and women's studies at UW-Madison, looking at some of the history behind drag performances, the ups and downs, sometimes backlash against them, past and present. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with a personal experience you might like to share, a question, 800-642-1234. Last summer on Central Time, I talked to author Michael Takash about the history of drag in Wisconsin in particular. Here's a little of Michael talking about drag being considered family-friendly about a century ago.
By 1910, you know, the rise of national drag celebrities like Bert Savoy and Carl Norman and Julian Eltinge really changed, like, the whole concept of female impersonation. I mean, it was completely family friendly to go to an Orpheum vaudeville show with your, you know, your grandmother in the 19-teens and 1920s, simply because everyone knew it was a man pretending to be a woman, and the joke was, you know, not on the audience. There was no deception. There was no depravity.
And that was part of a story where drag kind of went in and out of fashion and went in and out of public approval. Why do you think that it's gone through different eras, Finn, where at some point it might be fun for the whole family and in some cases targeted by others and even shut down?
I think these things often go in waves, commonly in association with political election cycles. There's these things track. So when you see the emergence of specifically transphobic or homophobic legislation set or increased stigma around community events that do involve an element of queerness, these are often associated with political campaigns, with shoring up an idea of what should be normative, what shouldn't be normative. But in fact, these things have persisted throughout those times, and it's impossible to get rid of it because human life is about performance and play and imagination. We dress up, we adorn ourselves, we impersonate animals, we impersonate other humans, we engage in masquerade. It's so much the fabric and creative expression of human life and of storytelling. And I think that's what draws people to spaces that may be queer spaces. They may not be queer spaces, but without necessarily even thinking, oh, this is a queer event. This is a theater event. It's about storytelling. It's about you know, this kind of creative brilliance. And we see the persistent popularity of these types of events in many different arenas, many, many different arenas.
As I mentioned at the outset, some of the states looking at legislation would regulate venues that host drag shows on a par with strip clubs. We heard from former Governor Walker. I quoted his online statement saying that drag shows are strip shows. I guess compare and contrast for us.
So there's two ways to approach this. And one is that Walker is implying in his comment that strip shows are bad and drag shows are like strip shows and therefore are bad and unwholesome. And I think that's highly problematic for many different reasons. One, drag is not strip, and I'll come back to that in a second, but I think that we should not be lured into thinking that we should defend drag on the grounds that it's not strip any more than you would have to defend Shakespeare by saying it's not a strip show. The power of that, not only to further stigmatize strip shows, you know, which is something I'm not really willing to go there, to throw strip shows under the bus in the effort to, you know, make drag something else. But also, in fact, the comparison is intended to be very homophobic, it's intended to be transphobic, and its greatest power is that any engagement with that comparison, even to refute the claim, legitimates the comparison as one worthy of debate. So we spend a lot of our airtime saying, well, is it or isn't it? Is it or isn't it? Instead of learning about queer culture on its own terms. We don't have an opportunity to learn about queer culture on its own terms because we're sitting here talking about whether you know, whether strip shows and drag shows have things in common. And in fact, they're two different performance events with different purpose, with different context, and a different set of possibilities within each genre.
We're talking to Finn Enke, professor of history, gender, and women's studies at UW-Madison. We're talking about the historical nature of drag performances in the midst of several recent legislative efforts in states around the country to criminalize drag in certain spaces, or at least heavily regulate it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest? What do you want to know more about when it comes to the history and culture of performing in drag? Have you seen a drag performance yourself with your family or friends? What did it mean to you? Have you participated in them yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Finn Enke, professor of history and gender and women's studies at UW-Madison. Several Republican-led states are looking at criminalizing drag performances in certain spaces, and we're talking about the history and the culture of drag performances. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Brandon is with us in Poinette. Brandon, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Brandon?
Well, I just tuned in, and it's strange because we just yesterday bought tickets to a drag show coming up in April in Madison, and we've never been. Me and my wife, my stepdaughter, and her boyfriend are planning on going. It's an 18-plus show, and just kind of curious what we're in for. I'm excited. I'm really excited to go. I've always wanted to see one.
Brandon, thanks for the call. Finn, I imagine there might be as many different answers as there are drag shows to that question, but what might you say to Brandon?
Well, I think that's exactly right. There are so many different kinds, and I'm very curious for Brandon about what drew you to the show.
Oh, that's a good question.
What made you still curious?
Are you still there, Brandon?
Yeah, I'm here. What was the question?
You mentioned you're excited to see the show. What was it that that caught your eye?
Well, it's a 80s, 90s music theme. That's cool. And I've just always heard they're a lot of fun. I've never heard anybody say anything bad about them. I've always heard everybody that I know that's been has had a blast. And I just think it's neat. And I'm excited to go.
Brandon, thanks for the call. And Finn, thanks for asking the question I should have asked.
It's a perfect opportunity because I think that Brandon's question, gosh, now I wonder what I'm in for, maybe is a result of somebody having made a comparison between drag and strip shows. Strip shows, their purpose usually to highlight tensions and desires around access to sexualized nudity. But drag shows, they're highlighting performative aspects of gender. It's play, it's fun, it's enhancement of the everyday work that goes into appearing in culture. And I think that's part of why they are so fun, because everybody, in fact, engages in this activity. We don't usually highlight it.
Brandon?
What it is to adorn ourselves, what it is to perform, even.
Brandon, thanks a lot for that call. I want to listen to Trixie Mattel, who joined the show back in 2021. That's the stage name of Brian Michael Furcus, a singer, actor, and drag queen who attended UW-Milwaukee. Trixie was the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 3. Here's Trixie talking about the wider appeal of drag, especially people in the cisgender community.
They've always liked drag. They just didn't always call it drag. So if you think of, like, the movie White Chicks, or if you think of Madea, or Mrs. Doubtfire, it's like, well, that all is drag. We just didn't really call it drag. But what's great is people are more and more accepting all the time. And when you become open-minded, you become accepting of things you didn't know about, and you find new things you like. I mean, that's just, like, universal. And I think that in America especially, we're so afraid of sex and gender. And drag throws a nuclear bomb and all of that. So when you enjoy drag and you go, oh, I thought this was going to be something at its core, drag is really just like, you know, it's your Halloween closet. You're playing dress up and lip syncing for your friends.
So the view from at least one drag performer there, Finn, what do you think?
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah, I think I couldn't say it better myself.
We are talking to Finn Enke, professor of history and gender and women's studies at UW-Madison, looking at the history and culture of drag performances. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Finn, a lot of the criticism and the threatening protests surrounding drag performances at least make the claim that it's about protecting children from seeing something, I guess, they ought not to see. What do you think of those arguments from some of the critics and some of the lawmakers trying to restrict drag performances?
Well, again, it's the oldest sort of tried and true political tactic on the books to claim that we need to protect children. In fact, children are themselves extremely creative people and are also engaging in figuring out what different ways they want to express themselves. And I think that giving children an opportunity to explore that is a very healthy thing. I would never want to raise a child without the opportunity to explore how they, enjoy presenting themselves in the world. And I think the other issue is that every drag show has its intended audience, and its show is geared toward that audience. If it doesn't reach that audience, it's not a successful performance. And so performances that are, for example, they have the storytelling hours and things like that, that really are pitched for young people at public libraries and this sort of context, they have children in mind, right? So they are children friendly. I think that the legislation suggests that children shouldn't ever dress up. Well, tell them that on Halloween. Children shouldn't ever be in theater and act as another being or another kind of human. Well, so should they not be in theater? Should they not even sing? Because much of singing is theatrical performance, right? So we're always taking on a role that is expressive, and drag shows for any audience is designed for that audience to think about the possibilities for human expression and the ways that we can play with that in everyday life as well as in performance contexts.
Let's bring on another caller. Julie is with us in Sister Bay. Julie, hi.
Hi, how are you today? I just wanted to mention I was on the school board a few years back, and I understand the conservative measures that a school board has to take as far as the drag shows in the schools. I would be all for it, but I think there's just not enough education, and when you're dealing with so many parents and so many students, it would be just a tough thing. But I wanted to say that my husband and I had attended a drag show 25 years ago at the Dinosaur Theater in Las Vegas. We did not know what to expect, and to this day, it is probably still the most fun thing that we ever attended. The talent was unreal. The singing, it was just beautiful, and we still talk about it to this day.
Julie, thanks a lot for that call. Julie personally enjoyed that drag show, but understands why school boards might be cautious about allowing, say, that thing we heard about at Madison East. What would you say to, people serving on a school board or community members who are considering, a student group hosting a drag show on the school campus?
Well, I think they need to educate themselves about what people are actually doing. And I think if they're going to ask about that they should be asking, about any of the contexts that kids are in. To be honest, the performances of transphobia and homophobia, these are performances we experience day in and day out. Those don't tend to get recognized as performative. They don't tend to get recognized as something that we should be concerned about, though they're directly targeting trans and non-binary and genderqueer and gay and lesbian bisexual kids. So So I do think there is an issue there with how do you protect all the members of a school and invite everybody into their creative vitality as human beings? And if we can ask that question first, without engaging in homophobic and transphobic and damaging sorts of stigmatizing discourse and behavior, then that's a question that's important to ask. How do we protect and how do we encourage and how do we allow all of the members of our community to flourish as themselves and to explore new things? And it is often a community conversation.
Julie, thanks for that call. And Finn, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Finn Enke is professor of history and gender and women's studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We've been talking about the history and culture of drag performances. This as several Republican-led states are looking at proposals to either criminalize performing in drag in certain spaces or offer new restrictions to venues that that host drag performances. Coming up after the news, find out what state Supreme Court justices actually do besides ruling on cases as voters head to the polls next week for the primary election. And you can get us started right now. Is there something you are curious about as to what the state Supreme Court does and why we elect justices in the first place? You can email right now, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And you can head over to WPR.org for interviews with most of the candidates in that primary and a lot of news coverage of the campaign so far.